Bert Olivier, Brownstone Institute, one of the very best exposés of the covert, very well hidden, bellicose attempts to rob all of humanity, barring the minuscule number of psychotic individuals comprising the inimical opposition, of their material possessions and their immaterial freedom, was published fairly recently. It is accurately titled The Great Taking, 2023, and was written by David Webb, one of the most courageous and finance-savvy authors I have ever come across. He introduces the book on page 1 in uncompromising terms. What is this book about? It is about the taking of collateral, all of it, the end game of this globally synchronous debt accumulation supercycle. This is being executed by long-planned, intelligent design, the audacity and scope of which is difficult for the mind to encompass. Included are all financial assets, all money on deposit at banks, all stocks and bonds, and hence, all underlying property of all public corporations, including all inventories, plant and equipment, land, mineral deposits, inventions and intellectual property. Privately owned personal and real property financed with any amount of debt will be similarly taken, as will the assets of privately owned businesses, which have been financed with debt. If even partially successful, this will be the greatest conquest and subjugation in world history. We are now living within a hybrid war conducted almost entirely by deception, and thus designed to achieve war aims with little energy input. It is a war of conquest directed not against other nation-states but against all of humanity. In the prologue of the book, Webb paints a richly textured, autobiographical picture of his provenance as finance guru, obviously with exceptional intelligence and, it turned out, courage. His knowledge of finance and economics has been the result of long years of work in the field, but he recalls the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, before the start of his professional career, when he was a child, and what he calls, witnessing, the subsequent, industrial collapse, of the U.S. in Cleveland, where the family lived, culminating in, the complete destruction of everything we had known, page V. Before he gets into the details of his life, he commences the prologue with an indirect intimation of his reasons for writing the book, page V. Presently, as we well know, families are divided. People are experiencing a kind of isolation, perhaps not physically, but in spirit and mind. This has been made to happen through the dark magic of false news and narrative. This alone has been a great crime against humanity. The tactical purposes are many: to confuse and divide, to cause disengagement, to demoralize, to instill fears and to introduce false focal points for these fears, to manipulate the historical narrative, to create a false sense of the present reality, and ultimately, to cause people to acquiesce to what has been planned. It is impossible to overstate the urgency of Webb's message. Everyone who reads this article should download the book, free, at the link provided above, or at least view the documentary. Based on it at chd.tv, Rumble and, I don't know for how long, YouTube. It makes for compulsive reading, a kind of non-fictional, real-world detective story, where you, the reader, are both the victim of the crime and the one looking over the detective's shoulder at the evidence that he is digging up. And is there persuasive evidence? In the court of human justice, which should be established, if it does not exist, the primary documentary evidence adduced by Webb would be sufficient to incarcerate all of these culprits, if not condemn them to capital punishment, recalling that, etymologically, capital, or, of the head, in Latin, relates to one's head, which was usually implicated in hanging and decapitation. It also echoes in, wearing a cap, that Webb knows only too well how he has exposed himself, and his family, with this book, and earlier, in addresses where he shared his findings with audiences in Sweden and the U.S., is clear where he writes, against the backdrop of the two occasions where he presented his insights, together with evidence, p.xxx. Less than a month after speaking at that conference in the U.S., a man contacted me who asked to meet in Stockholm. He had been the chairman of a U.S. political party, and had a long career related to the defense establishment. He stayed at a hotel within a short walking distance from my apartment. We had lunch. He suggested a pint of ale. He asked me to explain the subject of which I had spoken at the conference. I went through the evidence and implications. The odd thing is that he then asked no questions about the subject. Instead, he fixed me in the eye and said, "Does your family know you are doing this?" He said nothing more. That was the end of the meeting. I paid the bill and left. Perhaps it had been a courtesy call. We all have to die sometime, and being assassinated must be among the most honorable ways to do it. One must have been doing something right. Made a difference. No classier way to die, really. I always wanted to be like John Lennon. One could easily be fooled by Webb's debonair shrugging off of what could indeed have been a thinly veiled death threat from his dinner guest, but the fact remains that anyone who has the courage to oppose the psychopaths trying to hijack the world runs a tremendous risk, the more high-profile such opposition becomes. This is shown in the recent death, by suicide, yeah, right, of Janet Ossebaard, who made the series, The Fall of the Cabal, and was involved in the unmasking of a network of pedophiles. The chances that she committed suicide, as reported, are pretty slim, I would say. She was evidently a thorn in the side of the murderous cabal. Returning to Webb's book, he tellingly recounts how, after 9/11, when he saw all the signs of a deteriorating U.S. economy everywhere, concomitantly there were undeniable indications that the Bush administration was spreading disinformation on this, covering it up by disseminating spurious reports of American economic strength. In reality, however, the opposite was the case, symptomatic of which was the rapid shutting down of American manufacturing capacity and outsourcing it to China, which was obviously in on the deal. Nothing less than the planned loss of the American industrial base was occurring, while, accompanying this, Alan Greenspan was lauding the putative productivity miracle resulting from technology investment and development. It was a masterly performance of pulling the wool over Americans' eyes. Simultaneously, the impression of prosperity was further solidified by projecting the illusion that there was no risk in borrowing money. The ability to repay loans was ostensibly guaranteed. Webb's persistent, perspicacious sleuthing has uncovered the trail which reveals the steps taken years ago to prepare for the global economic collapse we are facing now. This included the 2008 financial collapse, of which he writes wryly, p. XXVIII. In the aftermath of the global financial crisis, it eventually became known that tens of trillions in losses in derivative positions were housed in the biggest banks, which were then bailed out with newly created money. The prime brokers would have failed, but to prevent that they were made banks and also received direct injections of created money from the Fed. No one was prosecuted. On the contrary, the perpetrators were rewarded with enormous bonuses. It was almost as if it had all gone according to plan. If I understand Webb correctly, this is the strategy that has been repeated several times, at least since the second half of the 19th century, resulting in the rich getting much richer and the poor getting much poorer. In brief, focusing on velocity of money, VOM, velocity multiplied by money supply equals GDP. Lower velocity results in lower GDP, page 3, Webb shows that, given the cyclical collapse of economies and empires in the 20th century, following the Great War, and the demonstrable benefit, despite all this hardship, of certain banking interests regarding control and creation of money, as well as of key institutions, the contemporary heirs of all this control knew that a similar collapse would recur. They have been preparing for it, and they are determined to remain in control. Hence the supposed Great Reset. During the dot-com bubble and bust period, Webb studied the relationship between financial markets and the Federal Reserve Bank, and realized that the latter was deliberately influencing the former by manipulating the money supply, that is, routinely printing more money than, correlatively, GDP growth. If money supply growth is more than GDP growth, a financial bubble develops, divorced from any real economic growth. By the end of 1999, the money supply had increased by more than 40% of GDP annually, signaling that VOM was imploding. Does this sound familiar? Since the start of the pandemic, trillions of US dollars have been printed, accelerating the widening of the gap between money supply and real economic productivity, and thus hastening the financial collapse. This is what the cabal wants. After all, as Webb tersely remarks, page 4, crises do not occur by accident. They are induced intentionally and used to consolidate power and to put in place measures, which will be used later. Rather apocalyptically, he continues, pp 5-6. VOM has now contracted to a lower level than at any point during the Great Depression and World Wars. Once the ability to produce growth by printing money has been exhausted, creating more money will not help. It is pushing on a string. The phenomenon is irreversible. And so, perhaps the announcement of the Great Reset has been motivated not by global warming or by profound insights into a fourth industrial revolution, but rather by certain knowledge of the collapse of this fundamental monetary phenomenon, the implications of which extend far beyond economics. Just how far becomes increasingly clear as one reads through this densely documented book, not a book with many pages, but a big book as far as the importance of its theme and its substantiation is concerned. Given the number of reports and other sources which Webb cites, it is impossible to do justice here to all their details and their pertinence for Webb's argument that the so-called elites have spent years to prepare for a supercycle collapse that will necessitate the transition to a new world order, with them still in control. I can therefore only lift out the salient parts of his argument. The first is neatly captured where he writes, page 7. There are now no property rights to securities held in book entry form in any jurisdiction, globally. In the grand scheme to confiscate all collateral, dematerialization of securities was the essential first step. The planning and efforts began over half a century ago. Not only was the CIA intimately involved in this dematerialization, which essentially meant moving from paper-based stock certificate archiving to a computer-based system, but the CIA project leader was moved to a senior position in the banking sector without any banking experience. Webb raises the possibility, interrogatively, that the ensuing paperwork crisis was manufactured to justify the dematerialization process, which paved the way for the present electronic archiving system worldwide. Small wonder the epigraph for this chapter is a quote from Sun Tzu, which is just as applicable to today: all warfare is based on deception. This also covers the topic of the next chapter, security entitlement, of which Webb writes, page 9, the greatest subjugation in world history will have been made possible by the invention of a construct, a subterfuge, a lie, the security entitlement. And indeed, having informed one that, since their inception more than 400 years ago, these tradable financial instruments were recognized, by law, as personal property, he hits the reader with the news that this is not the case any longer. In practice, Webb explains, this implies that even if, wishing to avoid the complications of a car dealership possibly going bust after purchasing a car on an installment plan, one has bought it for cash, this will no longer work. Security entitlements have been changed legally to permit creditors of the bankrupt car dealership to seize your car as an asset that still belongs to the dealership. Webb sums this legal coup up as follows, page 10, essentially all securities owned by the public in custodial accounts, pension plans and investment funds are now encumbered as collateral underpinning the derivatives complex. The protected class have legally stolen all our assets from us even before the anticipated and engineered global financial implosion occurs, if it does. Moreover, through additional legislation, this has been harmonized to ensure that secured creditors be guaranteed that their assets be protected through cross-border mobility of legal control of such collateral, page 16. Furthermore, safe harbor provisions were made timelessly to protect the ruling class, page 32. In 2005, less than 2 years before the onset of the global financial crisis, safe harbor provisions in the U.S. bankruptcy code were significantly changed. Safe harbor sounds like a good thing, but again, this was about making it absolutely certain that secured creditors can take client assets, and that this cannot be challenged subsequently. This was about safe harbor for secured creditors against demands of customers to their own assets. It gets worse. It turns out that, if something called central clearing parties, tasked with providing clearing and settlement for trades in a variety of financial transactions, is insufficiently capitalized to prepare for the eventuality of failing, and such a failure occurs, it is the secured creditors who will take the assets of the entitlement holders. This is where it is going. It is designed to happen suddenly, and on a vast scale. Webb goes on to disabuse readers of the belief that the so-called bank holiday ended the Great Depression, Chapter 8, and of believing Ben Bernanke's promise, in 2002, that the Federal Reserve won't do it again, i.e. make its mistakes regarding what led to the Great Depression. Instead, he cautions, page 46, is the Fed indeed very sorry? Can one believe the promise that we won't do it again? They have studied the lessons of the past in detail. However, their purpose has been to prepare a new and improved global version for the spectacular end of this debt expansion supercycle. That's what this book is about. Webb's elaboration on the Great Deflation, Chapter 9, is a salutary reminder that this kind of thing has happened before, in the 1930s, albeit not on the scale that is being planned this time. In the conclusion, page 6-4, he drives his point home by confronting readers with the stark reality of what is happening. I feel like quoting the whole of this powerful chapter, but obviously that is redundant, because the book can, and should, be downloaded free via the link provided near the beginning of this article. Please read it. It is imperative to read all the detail that cannot be supplied here. Here is a smattering of citations from it. As a human being, should this not concern you? What part of the organized slaughter of vast numbers of innocent people can you find acceptable? Do you believe that you are special in some way, that you were being protected, or that you will be protected now? There has been abundant evidence of great evil at work in the world, throughout time and in our present time. Do you really wish to be ignorant of its existence and operation? P.64. To not know is bad. To not want to know is worse. Willful ignorance of the existence and operation of evil is a luxury even the wealthy can no longer afford. We are in the grip of the greatest evil humanity has ever faced, or refused to acknowledge, as the case may be. Hybrid war is unlimited. It has no bounds. It is global, and it is inside your head. It is never ending. Page 65. We have witnessed designs and real attempts to exert physical control over every person's body, globally, and this is continuing. Why is this happening? I will make a startling assertion. This is not because the power to control is increasing. It is because this power is indeed collapsing. The control system has entered collapse. Their power has been based on deception. Their two great powers of deception, money and media, have been extremely energy-efficient means of control. But these powers are now in rampant collapse. This is why they have moved urgently to institute physical control measures. However, physical control is difficult, dangerous and energy-intensive. And so, they are risking all. They are risking being seen. Is this not a sign of desperation? pp. 67-68. Never before has a system benefited so few at the great expense of so many. Is this not inherently unstable and unsustainable? Physical control, as opposed to rule by deception, requires enormous energy. Can this be sustained while destroying all economies and abusing all people globally? They do not know how to build back better. Look at their footprint around the world, the destruction, the economic devastation. Page 68. Let me close with John F. Kennedy's own words. Our problems are man-made, therefore, they can be solved by man. Page 70. In turn, I shall conclude with the last paragraph of Webb's prologue. Let us take this to heart, spread the link to his book far and wide. And, to quote Naomi Wolf's recent book's title, Face the Beast, bravely and resolutely. It is my hope that in making this unpleasantness explicit, and doing so at this time when developments are becoming more apparent, that awareness might spread, and that the worst might be averted. Perhaps this great taking might not be allowed to happen if we each hold up our end, even the investment bankers, and say forcefully, we will not allow this. It is a construct. It is not real. Amen. Source. Brownstone Institute.